It took an hour to figure out who was going in which vehicle. I couldn't believe it could be so complicated. People kept changing their minds. Alliances formed, frayed, and dissolved. Inter-alliance coalitions snapped in and out of existence like virtual particles. Cord's big boxy fetch, which had three rows of seats, was to be occupied by her, Rosk, me, Barb, Jad, and Saman. Furman Beller had a large mob that was made to travel on uneven surfaces. He would take Leo, Arcibalt, and three of the Hundreders who had decided to throw in with us. We thought we had pretty efficiently filled the two largest vehicles, but at the last minute, another extra, who had been making a lot of calls on his Jija, announced that he and his fetch were joining our caravan. The man's name was Ganeliel Crade, and he was pretty clearly some kind of Deolator from a counter-Bayesian arc. Whether Warden of Heaven or not, we didn't know yet. His vehicle was an open-back fetch whose bed was almost completely occupied by a motorized tricycle with fat, knobby tires. Only three people could fit into its cab. No one wanted to ride with Ganeliel Crade. I was embarrassed on his behalf, though not so embarrassed that I was willing to climb into his vehicle. At the last minute, some younger associate of his stepped up, tossed a duffel bag into the back, and climbed into the cab with him. So that completed the Bly's Butte contingent. The direct-to-Tredegar contingent comprised four mobs, each with one owner-driver and one tenor: Tulia, Wybert, Rethlet, and Ostaban. Other seats in these vehicles were taken up by Hundreders who wanted no part of an Orlo expedition or by other extras who had volunteered to come on the journey. With the exception of Cord and Rosk, all of the extras appeared to be part of religious groups, which made all of the avowed more or less uncomfortable. I reckoned that if there had been a military base in this area, the secular power might have ordered some soldiers to dress up as civilians and drive us around. But since there wasn't, they'd hit on the idea of relying on organizations that people were willing to volunteer for on short notice, which in this time and place meant ARCs. When I explained it to people in those terms, it seemed to settle them down a little bit. The tenors sort of understood it. The Hundreders found it quite difficult to fathom and kept wanting to know more about the ideologies espoused by their would-be drivers, which in no way shortened the process of getting them into vehicles. Ganeliel Crade was probably in his fourth decade, but you could mistake him for a younger man because he was slender and whiskerless. He announced that he knew the location of Bly's Butte, and that he would lead us there and we should follow him. Then he got into his fetch and started the engine. Furman Beller ambled over and grinned at him until he opened his window, then started talking to him. Pretty soon I could tell that they were disagreeing about something, mostly by watching Crade's passenger, who was glaring at Beller. I got that mud-on-the-head sense of embarrassment again. Ganeliel Crade had spoken with such confidence that I'd assumed he'd already gone over this plan with Furman Beller and that the two of them had agreed on it. Now it was obvious that no such thing had ever happened. I'd been prepared to follow Crade wherever he led us. I could now see that this business of being the leader was going to be a pain in the neck, because people would always be trying to get me to do the wrong thing or get rid of me altogether. "Some leader," I said, referring to myself. "Huh?" asked Leo. "Don't let me do stupid things anymore," I ordered Leo, who looked baffled. I started walking towards Crade's fetch. Leo and Arcibalt followed at a distance. Crade and Beller were openly arguing now. I really wanted no part of this, but I had been cornered into doing something,